was 6 years old, I wrote a letter, sent it.
And welcome to the Animal Voices Show on Cooperative Radio 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, December 23rd, 2011, and I'm your host, Alyssa Ray. I'm joined today in studio by my co-host and harmless innovator, Carissa Thorpe.
Hello.
Hi, Carissa. Also in studio with us today are Morgan Ahoff and Jesse Brennan, who are here to help make sure the technical side of things runs smoothly. Thank you all for taking the time to join us in the busy holiday season. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-friendly news, events, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening, both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are respected as individual beings in their own right. On today's show, we feature an interview with Colleen Patchett-Gaudreau. That'll be at about the midway mark in the show. Before that, we'll take a look behind the doors of the turkey industry. It's a grim reality, but we believe in the value of bearing witness. And it is, well, 'tis the season. Also, on a hopeful note, Carissa has prepared a feature with some of the highlights of 2011, milestones for the vegan and animal rights movement. So first of all, thank you, Carissa, for joining us again. I know you're not, you're sort of a guest co-host today. Yeah. You haven't been on the show in a while. You've been busy with other things.
Yes.
Learning about how to be a better voice for animals. And
yeah,
and
I'm going to journalism school so that I do just that.
Amazing. And you've also been busy lately with another venture. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So Tara Lee Gardner, who is often on the show as well, and I, we've started up a business together called Harmless Innovations. We're planning on doing a secret supper club that's going to start in January. Our first event is going to be on January 7th with a drinks night.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, that's not happening. It's an appetizer night.
But the drinks are more important, always.
So if people are interested in that, they can find us online on our Facebook page or email us. And our website is just harmlessinnovations.com. We've also been doing like bake sales. And what we did the past 2 days is we baked a whole bunch of goodies and then delivered it to people who ordered Christmas baskets from us yesterday, which
was fun. Amazing. What sort of goodies?
We've got pumpkin banana loaf, regular banana bread, donuts that Tara made, blueberry muffins. I made gingerbread cookies and peanut butter cookies and mint chocolate fudge.
Wow.
And cupcakes. And
you have been busy.
Yes.
That sounds amazing. So you're continuing with this sort of gift basket delivery program after the holidays?
Yes, we are. We're going to, we took some pictures yesterday of all the baskets once they were done up, and we're going to put them up on our website and just let people know that that is still an option for Valentine's Day. We're going to try to do it again and cater it to Valentine's Day, but any time of the year, and we can do a birthday thing. And Nina, the other night, who we were both at her birthday, she ordered a cheesecake from me, so
yeah,
that's an option as well.
Awesome. That's so great to hear that that we're getting out there and finding other ways to use our passions to help animals. And I really like the name, Harmless Innovations. It's lovely.
Thank you.
I wanted to, obviously we're in the midst of the holiday season. It's just Christmas is a couple days away. Not sure who celebrates that or, you know, what that's based around. Most of us do some form of gift giving at this season. And I was at Nice Shoes yesterday picking up a couple gifts. Nice Shoes is a vegan, ethical, animal-friendly shoe and accessory store on Fraser Street in Vancouver at Fraser and 20th. I was there because they have a stocking stuffer sale on right now. And I just kind of wanted to promote that. I picked up Forks Over Knives DVDs for 15% off.
Yeah.
I had a coworker who asked for one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I lent it to her, and then she said she needed to own it. So I went and picked it up for her. And they have a sort of 15% off just for the next couple days. Today is couch guitar straps, which are non-leather, cruelty-free guitar straps that are pretty stylish. And tomorrow, the last day before Christmas, on Christmas Eve, it's just last-minute stocking stuffers. Go Max Go chocolate bars and Hurrah lip balm are all 15% off. And I picked up a bunch of little, I don't know how to say the words, they're little organic chocolates. They're like individually wrapped.
Oh,
like,
I think it's, is it Sajax?
That's what it is, yeah. And they're just beautiful. They have like raspberry and caramel and a whole bunch of different little flavors, and they're really colorful and just really perfect for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I also got a little taste of the peppermint chocolate milk, the new Vitasoy soy milk. It is so tasty. It's amazing. Everyone should pick it up.
It's incredibly addictive, though, is the problem.
Well, pick it up and be careful. I guess, and they also have a new nog that's really good. And I don't really have much time to mention that also, of course, Carmivore has a $10 flat rate for shipping until the end of the year. So if you don't live in the area, also pumpkin cheese cakes, peppermint Nanaimo bars, lots of stuff you can pick up for the holidays. They got a whole bunch of Galliano Island soap works, soy candles, massage candles, belts, creams. No, I didn't say belts. Anyway, I just wanted to kind of promote our local vegan businesses. And then sort of on the topic of the holidays, of course, we're just a couple days away, and a big part of the holiday tradition for a whole lot of people is a feast centered on the roasted carcass of a bird. On our pre-Thanksgiving episode this year, we discussed the how to enjoy a compassionate meal with family, with tips and everything. Today, I'd like to focus on the why. Out of deep affection and respect for the turkeys I've been blessed to meet at a sanctuary, I've been compelled to act on their behalf. And for the past few years, I've participated in the holiday leafleting organized by dedicated volunteers with a local animal advocacy and action group called Liberation BC. It's become a holiday tradition for me, and it's going on this week. Actually, today is the last day they're doing it. If anyone's interested, I think I will be there. It's at Waterfront SkyTrain Station, 4:30 to 5:30, just 1 hour, or maybe not even the whole hour. The other day, I was there just on my lunch break. I put in 15 minutes just leafleting, and I swear I got through to at least one person in 15 minutes, and like, that's a lot more than I usually do on my lunch hour. So it felt really good. And I just wanted to share actually what that leaflet is. They have amazing cruelty-free recipes and everything. It's really beautiful. And I just wanted to kind of shed a light on what goes on behind the doors of the turkey industry. So turkeys are packed in by the tens of thousands into windowless barns that resemble warehouses. Each turkey gets 1 to 4 square feet of space depending on target slaughter size. Each barn can contain up to 25,000 birds. This density inhibits natural instincts such as foraging for food and exploration. As the barns fill up with feces, the air becomes filled with ammonia fumes, dust, bacteria, and fungal spores. Overcrowding also results in foot pad lesions and other painful skin conditions. Frustrated by overcrowding, turkeys become aggressive and fight with each other. More space would reduce aggression, but it would also reduce profit. Instead, the turkey industry recommends cutting off the turkey's beaks and toes so that they don't kill each other. Turkey beaks are filled with sensitive nerve endings, and debeaking is an extremely painful process. Their toes are cut back to the first knuckle without anesthesia. These mutilations result in chronic pain and difficulty eating and walking. Today's turkeys have been bred to produce an abnormal amount of breast meat and reach slaughter size at 13 to 16 weeks. 40 years ago, the average was 32 weeks. This unnatural rate of growth results in chronic pain, degenerative hip disorders, broken bones, and respiratory and cardiovascular diseases because turkeys have been bred to be so large they can no longer mate normally. All breeding is accomplished through artificial insemination. At the Tom House, workers spend their entire day grabbing and holding male turkeys to extract semen through a process called milking. At the Hen House, the inseminators spend their day breaking hens. Turkeys, who are naturally inclined towards friendliness, become extremely frightened of the workers after enduring the rough handling at the breeding barns. Turkeys are roughly loaded and transported in trucks to slaughter. During loading, workers grab the turkeys by a wing or leg and throw them into crates. At the slaughterhouse, the turkeys often endure forced amputations when aggressively pulled while their feet are lodged in the crates. They're hung upside down by shackles, then run through an electric bath for stunning and a scalding tank for defeathering. The recommended codes of practice suggest that turkeys be unconscious prior to slaughter, but in practice this is poorly done and many birds are scalded alive in the defeathering tank. The speed of slaughter line means that mistakes are common and turkeys often die painful deaths. Every year, millions of Canadians eat turkeys as part of their holiday celebration. Many choose to buy organic or free-range turkey, but those turkeys face the same issues of breeding and slaughter as any factory-farmed turkey. Eating a turkey is a choice, and you can choose a compassionate and truly humane option by opting for an animal-free holiday meal. And the answer in the pamphlet says, what can you do? The simplest and easiest way to help animals is to go vegan. Visit our website for links to resources on living a compassionate lifestyle. And the website is liberationbc.org. And I wish everyone a compassionate holiday. And let's not forget the turkeys. Especially, I'd just like to send warm thoughts out to Kevin, the turkey that I met at the sanctuary on Main Island. And now I'm going to play a song by Jess Hill. It's a song called A Common Bird. It's not directly animal rights related, but it speaks to my heart, and I think it's a nice interlude.
Secrecy. host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour. Support your independent local community radio station, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO. Become a member today by calling 604-684-8494. Whatever you can give makes a difference. We are counting on you to stand up for independent media. 604-684-8494. And thank you so much.
All right, so now I have the Animal Voices Year in Review, or sort of the Year in Review for animals as well as veganism.
Because this is technically our last show of the year.
Oh, is it?
Technically.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
We're going to play one more, but it will be last year's show.
Oh.
Yeah.
So last year around this time, I think I mentioned it in the news, probably, that a lot of mainstream websites, I think Good Housekeeping was one of them, and there were several others that were predicting that vegan would be a really big trend to watch out for in 2011. And I would have to say that they were right. It started off, television was a big part of it, was a great medium for veganism this year, starting with Oprah. She did a vegan show with over, I think it was 307 or something like that, of her staff went vegan for a week. And then Kathy Freston came on and helped them through it and showed them how to shop for different things. And then they talked about it on the show. It was a bit of a disappointing show in how much they said it was still okay to eat meat, even though they were doing a vegan show. It seemed a little bit weird, but I think it still got a lot of people thinking about veganism. And then from there, I think Ellen quickly followed suit with a vegan episode as well, because she and her wife Portia de Rossi are both vegan, so that's fitting. And then Martha Stewart, I think her daughter is vegan, and she did a vegan show as well. And I think Kathy Freston was also on that one. So there was a lot of veganism on TV this year.
Amazing, yeah. I think that really, I mean, that was probably, what, last spring?
Yeah.
Most of the shows were earlier in the year. And yeah, I think, I mean, they all kind of happened all at once.
Yeah.
It was really exciting.
It was
just
what
to
is
see
this?
It's finally reaching the mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like you couldn't help but feel this infectious like energy. And everyone's like, the word now, I think, is just more... People understand the word.
Yeah.
You don't get that look like vegan or vegan. What's that?
Yeah.
Like it's now,
yeah,
the word is out there.
Definitely.
And hopefully that means good things for animals.
I could almost say it was the word of 2011 is what it seemed like.
Well, in our world,
yeah,
it sure was.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know about everyone else.
It just really seemed like it. Like, there's a reporter at the Georgia Strait that reports every single thing that happens in town within, like, it seems like 5 minutes. It's like you have the idea and he's already reported on it. Like, so it just seems like it's been thrown around a lot.
There's a buzz. The vegan buzz.
Yeah, definitely. And I understand that on Google, the searches of vegan surpassed vegetarian this year. People are just jumping right to it.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, instead of the vegetarian. And people are transitioning from omnivore to vegan now instead of, like, vegetarian. And
as it should be,
yeah.
I think, because...
It's so interrelated that
it
makes a lot more sense to go straight to vegan.
Yeah, and you can argue that eggs and dairy, there's actually more suffering and more death in those, which is like a huge kind of myth out there that there's no suffering involved.
Yeah. And especially when there's alternatives like soy milk and stuff like that.
So, loads now, like endless.
Yeah.
that's another thing. I don't know. Are you going to talk about that, like products and stuff? Like,
oh, no, I didn't have products.
But... I mean, I just kind of thought of that, but it seems like there's like a lot more. I mean, I don't know. I haven't done the research.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that a bunch of new products came out this year.
That is true. When I went down to LA for the animal rights conference, I know there were like certain things that I was looking for. Like I wanted to try the Justin's peanut butter cups.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to find them, but I did find them because they're not available in Canada and things like that.
Yeah. So. And what's the other thing?
I think
yogurt. Coconut yogurt.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't seen that out in stores before this year.
I think is it Silk that came out with the coconut? Or no, it's So Delicious. Came out with coconut yogurt and coconut milks this year, I think.
Yogurt was a big one that was missing. There was kind of a soy yogurt that just wasn't very good at all. And I think now there's really good ones.
Yeah.
And
I think this is a huge year for Daya.
Exactly. I was just going to say, Daya is everywhere.
Yes.
Daya is in all local, like, vegetarian restaurants, most of them.
And if people don't know what that is, it's a cheese alternative, which is made out of, like, tapioca. So
it's made in North Vancouver. It's mm-hmm. local product, and it's available all over the states at restaurants, yeah. you know, Whole Foods, all the big suppliers.
And people are interested in accommodating. Like, if you ask your pizza place, a lot of people have been doing that and getting it so that they can have vegan cheese on yeah. their pizza when they order.
It's not terribly expensive either. Yeah. It's yeah. very affordable. And if you show someone, if you show a restaurant or someone how yeah. cheap it is, like, there's really nothing standing in their way. If they yeah. want to reach out to a broader market and attract yeah. the new, you know, the new vegans, then they should get on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So animal victories this year, two elephants at the Toronto Zoo are being relocated to a sanctuary in California, and Bob Barker is footing the bill for that, so it's not even costing the city of Toronto anything. So I think that really helped to push that through. Cities have started banning fur. LA was the first one, I think, in North America. I think that might have been in May. And then finally...
Don't they sell a lot of fur? Isn't that a big, I would think, LA...
I think that's why it was a huge, wow. huge deal that they banned the sale of fur.
That's so amazing. I mean, I guess it is, like, it's probably being sold a lot to really rich people, but the yeah. people on council, yeah. You know, have their hearts in the right yeah. place. I wonder, how do they enforce this ban?
Yeah.
What happens next?
I don't know. Maybe it's like, there's probably a waiting period of phasing it out, because I know that happened with, like, the sale of puppies in Richmond when they banned that they still had, like, 6 months to yeah. sort of finish it.
Well, yeah. good.
And then finally, UBC released some info about the experiments that they do on animals every year, and the group Stop UBC Animal Research, which I'm a part of, we had thought that there was 100,000 animals tested on every year. There's over 200,000 animals experimented and tortured every year at UBC.
And that's now on record, and that yes. was being hidden from yes. the public before.
And they refused to give any information, and a lot of it's taxpayer funded. So
wow. That's a moment of silence for that.
Yeah.
But good news.
Yes.
Because I think the public doesn't really realize
yeah. how, and that's a huge number.
How huge it really yeah. is.
And then a city in Spain also ended bullfighting this year. They put a stop to that.
So I remember reporting on that earlier yeah. in the year. I cannot remember the name of the city, but
yes.
but that is hopefully setting a precedent, and I think it is, it's going in the way of tradition. It
yeah.
will be a memory soon.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And locally, we had the Walk for Farm Animals, which was bigger and better than ever before. It was put on by Liberation BC to benefit Farm Sanctuary. There were 75 people, including the carnival band, who marched with us for part of the way. And there was $11,679 raised, which was almost double last year's total.
Amazing.
Which is awesome. And there was a lot more media attention because this little thing you might have heard about, Occupy Vancouver, decided to set up shop at the exact same time that we were leaving.
Wow. Yeah. That was amazing timing.
Yeah.
And I think the word got out definitely to
yes.
a big audience.
Yeah.
What else in Vancouver? We got, didn't Nice Shoes open this year?
Yeah, Nice yes. Shoes open this year, which is the only all vegan shoe store in Canada that I'm aware of. They opened, I think that was in March, and shortly after Edible Flowers opened, which is, I'm going to say, Vancouver's first all vegan bakery, because I think there are more in the works.
Yes.
I know that Fairy Cakes is on their way. So
very soon.
Yes. And we also got our own slice of familiarity with Vegan Pizza House. It opened its doors, and in November, Vancouver got funky with the inaugural Vegan Prom YVR,
uh-huh.
which we both attended.
So much fun. Hopefully that is the first year.
Yeah. Of many.
Yes.
And Liberation BC hosted a very successful sold out advanced screening of Forks Over Knives that was packed in January.
Yeah.
And that film has really been making people consider veganism or go vegan.
Yeah, there was like 300 people there.
Yeah.
That room.
They turned
really
people
filled.
Away.
Yeah.
They turned people
that
away.
That was so inspiring. I was like, where
yeah.
did all these people come from? Like, I, you know, it's mostly the health message. Like, people really care about getting healthy
yeah.
and that, but I mean, it's all good
yeah.
for the animals in the end.
And it's been causing people to switch from vegetarian to vegan and straight to vegan. Like, Russell Brand recently went vegan as a result of watching that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I think we're out of time.
Yeah, sure, I guess.
Sorry.
And some other celebrities went vegan. The end.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about another film screening, actually. Speaking of film screenings, Liberation BC is hosting another event. It's the premiere of the movie called Vegicated. It's Tuesday... Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. And it'll just be at the Vancouver Public Library, the Central Branch downstairs in the Alice McKay Room. Vegicated is a feature-length documentary that follows three meat-and-cheese-loving New Yorkers who agree to adopt a vegan diet for 6 weeks. There's Brian, the bacon-loving bachelor who eats out all the time, Ellen, the single mom who prefers comedy to cooking, and Tesla, the college student who avoids vegetables and bans beans. There's a lot of alliteration there. Part sociological experiment, part science class, and part adventure story, Vegicated showcases the rapid and at times comedic evolution of three people who share one journey and ultimately discover their own paths in creating a kinder, cleaner, greener world, one bite at a time. So that's very exciting, Vegicated. Hopefully that reaches a wide audience. I haven't not seen it yet. I've watched the trailer, and I'm going to get a whole bunch of my friends to go.
Actually, I should mention, you can actually watch it online now. You can pay $5 to watch it online. I think if you just go to their website, if you search Vegicated, if you really want to see it before then. But it's a lot more fun to see it with everybody.
I think so.
So I'm waiting.
I think if I miss it, I'll watch it online. But for now, I'm going to tell people. Let's not tell people that they can watch it online.
Oh, but it might mean somebody watches it that's listening to us in Alberta
really
or something.
Far away.
Yeah.
Like, you mean more people are listening than just my friend?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Of course. There is another event that is coming up that is a little bit far off, but it was, I'm pretty sure it was like officially announced this week. It's Vancouver's Animal Rights Conference. The Animal Advocacy Camp has been confirmed. It will be February 25th and 26th, that's Saturday and Sunday, two full day sort of open format conferences, 2 days of learning about taking effective action for animals. Everyone has valuable skills, experiences, and ideas to share, and by working and learning together, we can build a stronger community of animal advocates and make a greater difference in the lives of animals. The event will take place at The Hive on West Hastings in Vancouver. And for more information, please visit animaladvocacycamp.ca and get in touch with the organizer to suggest topics. You can post your own bio and learn how to make this event a huge success. This is definitely a participatory event, so we all bring our unique perspectives. And, of course, 2 months seems distant, but it will, of course, fly by. So check out the website and get involved early. Now, we're going to take a little break.
Accordion Noir, your favorite Squeezebox show, celebrates its move to Wednesday evenings from 10 to 11 p.m. The boys with the bellows, according to our co-hosts Rowan and Bruce, squeeze the sounds from every continent into the weirdest accordion show on Earth. And that's saying something. Accordion Noir, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, Vancouver. Or you can hear us anytime at accordionnoir.org.
You're listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau is a tour de force in the world of animal advocacy and compassionate living. Her heart-centered approach has reached thousands, and she receives a stream of testimonials from people who've committed to a positive change and been touched by her message. For the past 12 years, she has dedicated her life to being a voice for animals and offering a guiding hand to people in the midst of transition. Through teaching cooking via classes, a DVD, and 3 award-winning cookbooks, The Vegan Table, The Joy of Vegan Baking, and Color Me Vegan, which we featured on the show a year ago. She has her master's in English literature, and she's utilized her passion for words to become a riveting speaker. She lectures at vegetarian and animal advocacy conferences around the U.S. and has the #1 veg podcast, Vegetarian Food for Thought. The mission of Colleen's work is threefold: to empower people to make informed food choices, to debunk myths about veganism and animal rights, and to give people the tools and resources they need to live according to their own values. And now she's joined us on the show to discuss her latest book, The 30-Day Vegan Challenge, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Cleaner, Getting Leaner, and Living Compassionately. And we spoke, Allison Cole and I actually reached her by phone earlier this week. So welcome again to the Animal Voices Show, Colleen. First of all, I just want to express my gratitude to you. It was your podcast that helped me through my own transition to a vegan lifestyle 4 years ago. And without your gentle hand guiding me, I certainly wouldn't be where I am today. So thank you for that, Colleen.
Thank you. That's just awesome.
Let's start by talking about your newest book, The 30-Day Vegan Challenge. There's a fair amount of books out there and websites that tout themselves as veg resources. What prompted you to write this book, and what makes it stand out?
Well, this is actually a book I wanted to do about 5 years ago as a web program, which I'm actually building right now as a web program. The idea is to just, you know, I know people want to make these changes, and I've been doing this long enough to know what people's challenges are. And so I wanted to give people, you know, one guide so that they could have everything they need and answer every question they have while they're going through this transition. I think the transition is the hardest part for people. It's not being vegan. It's once you're vegan, that's easy. You've changed habits and you know what to look for and you know what to grab. And that's the easy part because you've changed the habit. The trick is that transition period. And so that was really my whole intention in doing this book and in doing everything I do, is to give people the tools and resources they need to go through that transition so that they feel confident at the end and they have a foundation to stand on. I think the biggest problem when people make this transition is that they remove a foundation that is familiar to them, but they don't replace it with another foundation. And so that was the idea, is I wanted to give people something to stand on so they can feel really confident doing it.
So I believe that most all of us, espouse the values of kindness and compassion. So when faced with animal cruelty, people generally react with sadness and disgust. In your opinion, what is it that stops people from taking that extra step? In other words, why is it such a challenge for people to transition?
I know. It seems that way. I have this theory that people care so much that they don't make a change, if that makes any sense. It's really scary. I think change is scarier for people more than anything else. And we are creatures of habit, and we get used to the same things. And I think doing something different and not knowing what it's going to look like, I think, is really scary for people. So I think we have a great capacity as human beings to cut ourselves off from really internalizing something we might see that might upset us, but we don't absorb. And it's a level of protection. Mm-hmm. I believe, though, that people are so close to change that that's why they don't want to look at what they know is going to be upsetting, because it's the potential that they would be moved to change that scares them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know, and it's really interesting because we never know what it's going to take for people. I wish I had a magic bullet. I wish I had a magic answer that, you know, if we just turn this switch, that's what does it for people. But we never know what it's going to be, and it's why I really encourage all of us who've had this awakening, because I really do believe it's an awakening, to really remember where we came from so we understand when people are slower than we want them to be. And, you know, I know it's hard not to be impatient, because we're talking about life and death and suffering and immense violence and pain. So I know it's hard to be patient, but really I don't think we have any other choice. If we can guide people while not pushing them away, I think that's really going to make all the difference when they ultimately come to us.
Some people say that veganism is extreme or radical, and even though they might agree with the ethics, they think it's only for people who have superhuman discipline and resolve. What's your response to that?
My response to the fact that veganism is radical, it's so radical to eat fruits and vegetables. It's just so funny to me. It's, you know, it's because I think we put this in a box and people think it's a certain kind of cultish mentality where you have to follow a certain set of doctrines. And, you know, I think they look at it like a diet, and then you hear people say, you know, are you strict? I don't like the use of that word when talking about this. Am I strict? If being strict means that I'm consistent, then I am incredibly strict. Because all it, right?
Imagine
I mean, I've had people, I'm sure you've had the same thing,
beliefs.
Where people say, where's your line? As if someone's watching me all the time, and if someone weren't watching, I would sneak an animal product, or cheat, as they would say. And so I think people have that mentality because I think it's been, you know, kind of perceived as a diet. And so what I do at every turn is to demystify that for people. So I turn it on its head as soon as I'm talking to people. I mean, certainly in the larger work that I'm doing, that's the crux of what I do, is to turn it on its head and help people see this is not different than what you're doing already. This is not, you just have to shift your gaze and look in another direction. But I really want to return people to their own compassion. That's what this is about. It's very simple. I was just talking to a woman today who said, so what do you do for clothing? Where do you shop? And I said, I shop everywhere you shop. And I said, you know, you'd be really surprised what's there when you look for it. You're just not looking for it. And I said, you look at labels and you look for wool and you look for the things that you don't want to consume or buy. And she said, so you look at the labels being awake. And I said, that's exactly right. And what's wrong with that? And so that's what we all have to do, is kind of, this isn't crazy, this isn't strange, this is just compassion. And isn't that a beautiful thing?
Absolutely. Now, I consider you a formidable mythbuster when it comes to compassionate living. One of the biggest myths about a vegan diet is that it's nutritionally deficient. And we don't have time to cover all that here today. I just wanted to talk about a few key myths. First of all, just quickly, Colleen, can you tell us just where do you get your protein?
I don't. Oh. I don't get protein. I just skip it. It's overrated.
Totally.
Ridiculous. We're obsessed with protein, and what I find so funny about the protein myth is that if you were to ask someone what protein deficiency looks like, no one could tell you. They'll start talking about being tired, they'll start talking about iron, they'll talk about anemia, but as soon as you ask someone, well, what is it? I tried being vegetarian, you know, and usually that was for like a week or whatever, and then I had to eat meat because I really needed protein, and I said, well, what does that look like? How did it feel? Well, I just needed protein. Like, the people don't even know what it looks or feels like. So we're unnecessarily obsessed with protein. But really, we don't have to talk about every nutrient, because what I talk about in my myth-busting is the nutrients we need are plant-based. The nutrients we need are not animal-based, and that's one of the biggest myths we've all grown up with. And you don't have to be a nutritionist to understand the basics. The nutrients we need are plant-based. The only nutrient that we need that's not plant-based is also not animal-based, and that's B12, which is bacteria-based. So when I say that to people one-on-one or in a crowd, they get it immediately. And I start talking about calcium and how the cows get the calcium from the ground, and that's why there's calcium in their milk, and that's why we get the calcium barely, 30% of it, when we consume the cow's milk. So when you put it that way, people get it. I don't think it has to be complicated, and I think we have overcomplicated it. And so what I want people to do is just have it make sense on their own. I don't even want people to listen to me. I don't want them to believe me. Just, this is common sense. So with all of the nutrients, that's an easy one. The nutrients we need are plant-based.
One of the big challenges for new vegans is the cravings, especially for meat and cheese. I think I can speak for the Animal Voices host when I say giving up cheese can be a pretty big block. What's your advice for compassionate folks suffering from lingering cravings for foods that contribute directly to animal suffering?
Yeah. Well, as you know, in the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, there's two different chapters. One is called Meat Cravings, Fat and Salt Taste Good, and one chapter is called There is Life After Cheese, and there are corresponding podcast episodes on these topics. And so what I talk a lot about is that it's not animal flesh that we're craving when we say we crave meat, that it's fat and salt, that we don't crave the flesh of an animal, that we are not obligate carnivores, that we do not see an animal scurry past us and we start salivating and thinking about dinner. Like, that's just not what happens. But that does happen if you see a domestic cat. That does happen if you see any obligate carnivore see prey. But that's not what we do. We don't even do that if we see a dead animal on the side of the road, someone who's been hit by a car. We don't react that way. But what we do crave is fat, and we crave salt, and we crave mouthfeel, and we crave texture, and we crave familiarity, and we crave flavor. We crave the feeling of being full. So again, when I couch it that way to people that I'm talking to who says, oh, I could never give up bacon. I say, bacon? What's bacon? I had a joint interview with Mark Bittman last week, and he was talking about bacon, how good bacon is. And I said, Mark, what's bacon? It's fat and salt. And he threw in smoke. And I said, exactly. That's all it is. So when you can couch it that way to people, they get it. Cheese is the same thing. It's fat. It's a certain mouthfeel. It's salt. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, both in the podcast episode, There's Life After Cheese, and in the chapter in the book, talking first about kind of the comfort that we get from cheese, because I think there's a lot more going on than just people are so attached to this, to the taste of cheese. It's not that good. I mean, it's not. It's just fat and salt and certain sharpness and certain fermentation with what cheese is. So if we can get that out of our systems and our habits and our repertoire long enough to replace those emotions that we're getting from the cheese, you know, maybe it's recalling a certain memory that we really appreciate, and let's get it out long enough so that we can appreciate getting the fat and salt out of it that comes specifically from the cheese. But all of those things that we crave that I named, the mouthfeel, the fat, the salt, the texture, all of those things can be met with plant foods. And that's what I like about the 30 days, is that it just gives you enough time to eliminate them, to cleanse your palate, and to find those things that meet the same cravings that you think only cheese could meet.
And I think cleansing your palate by giving it a chance, I think it takes 2 to 6 weeks for your taste buds to change. Is that correct? And so when you say
It takes 3 weeks to change a habit, you know, and that's physical and it's mental. I like 30 days. Just, I think it's rounder. I just like the kind of the fullness of 30 days. But yes, absolutely. And I think people are surprised by that. I think they're surprised that within what seems to be such a short period of time, you can experience those kinds of changes in terms of cravings and certainly in terms of the physiological responses that your body has.
In the book, you really give a lot of answers for these cravings that we have that are plant-based. Let's talk about the food in the book. You include over 100 recipes, serving suggestions, and a full 30-day menu idea guide. One thing I especially love about the book is all the gorgeous color photos of the recipes. They're really tantalizing. And I don't consider myself a chef, but your recipes don't seem daunting at all. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about how you chose these specific recipes.
Well, the recipes in that book really are the ones that I know have really guided people over the years. And so they are pulled from my cookbooks, My Vegan Table, Joy Vegan Baking, and Color Me Vegan. So I chose those because I knew those were the ones that meet the cravings that people tend to have. And all of my recipes in all of my cookbooks are all based on the fact that I don't expect people to become chefs. I just want people to be able to do this when they get home, and I want it to feel really accessible. I do raise the bar. I do really encourage people and expect people to raise the threshold they have right now for chopping vegetables and preparing some food, most of which is about zero for most people, and I encourage them to kind of raise that to about 15 minutes a day. That's not very long, and so that's the philosophy behind all of my recipes, except for the ones that are meant to be a little fancier for guests. But I really just encourage people to get back in the kitchen and spend some time chopping some vegetables and making some dishes that are really very easy to do and very nutrient-dense and delicious.
And there's nothing wrong with chopping vegetables. I think that's a great habit to put into your life. If you're going to be doing anything domestic or for your own health and nutrition, chop some vegetables and get more in touch with your food and real food at that, right?
Yeah. Well, amen. And absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the thing is, as soon as I tell people, you know, because I do this whole spiel where people say, I don't have time. And I say, you know, you don't
make
have time.
Make the time. Get up 15 minutes earlier.
Idol, right? I mean, someone's watching these shows. How many hours?
Do it while you're watching American Idol.
Exactly. They can put it on in their kitchen while they're doing it. But the truth is, we have the time. People have used that excuse for too long, and it's not that we don't have the time. We do have the time. People have the time to watch these television shows or drive to a restaurant, park, and wait for a table and sit down and eat and then wait for the check. It's not time that we don't have. It's that we're not using the time we have to chop those vegetables. And it doesn't take that long. We're not talking about spending hours and hours in the kitchen every day chopping vegetables. I'm talking about 15 minutes a day.
And I really appreciate, too, how the recipes are just really familiar. Things like mac and cheese and lasagna and chickpea burgers and better than tuna salad. It's very relatable.
That's right. And I did that on purpose.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Mac and cheese, lasagna. People are going to want to make those recipes who are just starting out.
I know the idea of peaceful animal advocacy wasn't created by you, but I'm pretty sure you coined the term joyful vegan. And as a thread of warmth and light that's really woven throughout all the work you do, can you tell me a bit about the idea of joyful veganism and how that what that means to you?
Yeah, thank you. I will have to say that I think the first time I heard the concept was from Julia Hill, who called herself a joyous vegan. Mm-hmm. So not that I was trying to find my own way, but joyful just felt more natural for me. So I've been saying that for a long time, but I do believe that concept, for me, was first heard by Julia Hill, and I don't know how much she talks about it, but I don't want to take full credit for that. You know, because there's nothing more powerful than living in such a way that is an extension of your deepest values and biggest heart. This is all based on being fully aware of my affection and desire to not want to hurt anyone. And that's a pretty powerful way to live, and it can be a very painful way to live. And then we have a choice at any given moment what we want to express. And what I want to express is the joy of that. That doesn't mean I can't also express the frustration and the sorrow and the acute awareness when we know what is happening. And you know, I often say only an open heart can break, but I wouldn't want it any other way. And so also aware that this is a life of attraction, especially when we first have this transition or go through this transition. We want to share it with everybody, right? I mean, you know, it's like you're learning something new. You've had this awakening. You're seeing the world from an entirely different place, and you want to tell everybody. And then often we find that people are not so excited about hearing it. And so we learn, or we should, I think, find a way to be able to share this with people in a way that will attract them. And I mean that quite literally, being attractive enough that they're going to say, what is this about? And you seem so happy, and this just seems so beautiful, and I'd like some of that. And so that's really, you know, it's my being a joyful vegan is very authentic for me. I'm not trying to be a certain way, but it certainly is something that I'm always aware of when I am an ambassador for this to people that I meet. That's the expression of being vegan that I want the world to see, which is the joyful aspect. But we can do that and still be truthful. And I think that's the real art of it, is still being able to find our voice and speak for the animals and speak on behalf of truth while being joyful.
It's really what I've found is it's really about bringing it back to the heart. Like, I don't think people can really argue with your heart and what you feel inside. But when you can argue about facts and statistics. And,
absolutely.
You know.
It's so true. And that's why I always say that I'm not asking people to live according to my values. I'm urging them to live according to their own. Mm-hmm. And I don't talk about stats and statistics and facts and, you know, throwing those things out at people. I just don't. I don't think that's where it's going to... I know it. I mean, I can only speak for the work that I've done and the reaction that I've seen in the work that I've done. And it is absolutely a heart connection. That's what's ultimately going to change, to really change it. I mean, you can have people make some superficial changes. Mm-hmm. When you talk about stats and you talk about, you know, some things, they might make some superficial changes, but the real transformation takes place at a heart level.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Yeah, I definitely found that from your book, and thank you so much for writing it. It's amazing.
Thank
I just
you.
Have a couple other questions. We are in the midst of holiday season here, and I would be remiss not to mention that you have some excellent chapters in your book that offer some great tips. One is called Celebrating the Holidays, in which you include some decadent-looking recipes, including butternut squash risotto and toasted sage and roasted Brussels sprouts with caramelized onions and toasted pistachios. And you have a quote in that chapter. It says, "We can eat in such a way that it reflects our own values and honors tradition at the same time. They need not be mutually exclusive." Can you tell us what you mean by that and maybe offer some practical strategies for dealing with holiday gatherings?
Sure. Well, you know, I think there tends to be the misconception because animals have been so wrapped up in the foods that we make around the holidays. I'm actually opening my oven right now as we speak because I've just tested some stuffed mushrooms that I'm making for my holiday dinner for friends. I'm really not just saying this. This is really true. I've made some stuffed portobello mushrooms stuffed with tempeh and shiitake mushrooms and... Mm. Looks pretty good. I'm pretty excited. But the reason I talk about reflecting both your values and tradition is because we tend to think that, oh my gosh, vegans are breaking tradition. You can't be vegan or vegetarian at Thanksgiving because it's all about the turkey. And, you know, what I'm actually doing on Friday for the dinner party that I'm throwing is I'm creating a traditional English Christmas dinner, right? And so someone might say, and people have, how can you do that? My God, that must be so hard. I can't believe you're doing that. You can't do that. The whole tradition of English food is, you know, meat. Well, whose tradition? And when? And when do we draw? When is it no longer tradition, but it's and then it's contemporary? I mean, who says we can't create new traditions all the time? And in fact, we do create new traditions all the time. That's the whole point. We do not do the same thing we did, even if we're following a recipe that we, you know, that our grandmothers passed down. That has changed. It's changed, and we make changes all the time when we're following certain rituals and adhering to certain traditions. So again, it's turning it on its head and saying, wait a second, we cherry pick all the time. So what's the difference here? So of course we can uphold our values of compassion and wellness and whatever it is that, you know, compels us to be vegan and honor tradition at the same time. So you tweak something, you make a little change. You know, if it's about the centerpiece, you know, or a focal point on the plate, you make that some kind of chewy, roasted, familiar, you know, texture or whatever.
Yeah, and tradition is not an excuse. Those are those excusitarians again, right?
Absolutely.
We can do what you want when it's a celebration for yourself and your friends and your family. Do what you want.
Absolutely. And it's so not about that meat, that turkey. I mean, that's if people are bringing it down to that, if that's what they whittle down that particular holiday, they need to be reminded that it's about something so much bigger than that. And as you said, you know, depending on the holiday, sometimes it's about community, sometimes it's about forgiveness, sometimes it's about gratitude, sometimes it's about family. That's what it's about, not this one particular thing that we've become really attached to. So it does become just another excuse that people use to stay blocked.
Yeah, thank you for that. I hope that people can kind of hold that message in their hearts. I know the holidays are particularly stressful.
Well, if it's any consolation, they're probably stressful also for non-vegans, too. The holidays are just stressful.
They're just stressful.
They're just stressful.
For sure. Don't take it personally. I just wanted to talk a bit about what's sort of coming up for you. I noticed you just updated your blog with a list of podcasts we can expect in the next year.
And your website, too.
And your website. Yeah. Can you tell us about some of the topics you plan to be covering in 2012?
Sure. Well, I definitely am very excited to get back to focusing on the podcast. So that's something I'm really dedicated to in 2012. And some of the topics that I have on my list include, well, I'm working very hard on some issues here around backyard slaughter, which I think is a real backlash going on right now. And it's very sexy, very trendy thing to do, this urban agriculture, this homesteading. People are really getting into raising and killing animals in their backyard. So I will talk about that. And I do plan on doing an episode on ducks. You know, I have different episodes on different specific animals. I want
Daffy
to focus
ducks,
on ducks,
I think it was called.
What's that?
Was it called Daffy Ducks? I
think. Daffy for Ducks.
Daffy for Ducks, okay.
I like alliteration, if you haven't noticed in my podcast titles. Yeah. I do want to talk about zoos and circuses, both, you know, probably separately, but zoos is definitely something that's come up a lot for me, for people, from people asking me to talk about that. Ritual slaughter is one that I've been thinking about a lot, whether it's halal or, or kosher slaughter. People are really misinformed about what that means. So, yeah, a lot of fun topics.
That basically wraps it up. I just wanted to thank you for joining us on Animal Voices today, and thank you always for shining your light and dedicating your life to being a voice for animals.
Oh, you too.
Thank you so much, Colleen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Animal Voices on 102.7 FM CFRO Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And that was author and speaker Colleen Patrick-Goudreau discussing her recent book, The 30-Day Vegan Challenge, which I have to say is also a great resource book for seasoned vegans. She also talked about her podcast, Vegetarian Food for Thought. And I'd like to apologize about the sound quality. I'm a bit sad I didn't get a chance to speak to her about the other book she's released this year, Vegan's Daily Companion, 365 Days of Inspiration for Cooking, Eating, and Living Compassionately. It looks like a beautiful book. It's hardcover, color, sort of week-by-week points and tips for just ongoing inspiration.
Yeah. I like to just open it when I go to chapters and I'm in the vegan section and just sort of turn to something and get some inspiration.
Yeah. I'd love to have a copy myself and give one as gifts. And of course, maybe we'll have her on the show again to talk more about that book. And you are, of course, listening to Animal Voices. And to learn more about our show, please visit our website, animalvoices.org, or join our group on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver. You'll find links and videos about the topics we cover on the show, as well as our past shows in podcast form. Keep in touch with us on Twitter, where we'll let you know about upcoming guests. It's Animal Voices YVR. If you have any feedback or suggestions about the Animal Voices show, we encourage you to email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And this is a reminder that you are listening to listener-supported non-corporate radio. It's vital to all social justice movements, giving a voice to those who are largely invisible to the mainstream media. Please show your support of this invaluable resource by visiting cooperadio.org or by calling 604-684-8494. And upcoming on next week's show, what do we have for you? We're going to play the show that we did last holiday. It's a really excellent show. It's about taking on the New Year's resolution to go veg or vegan for 2012. And also the hosts will talk about their transition stories. It's very important to remember our stories, remember where we came from. And it's very moving and powerful and sometimes just like, you know, quiet and slow and plodding away. We all have our different ways to get there. We'll also be featuring an interview with Jennifer Jamal. She's the director of sales at Carmivore, the vegan store, which is in New Westminster at 610 Columbia. And she'll just talk about, all the things that they offer in their store and you know, lifestyle support. And I will now going to leave you today with a powerful and uplifting song by Thistle, otherwise known as Deborah Lee Halinda. The song speaks to the challenges we're facing and reminds people that our barriers are largely mental. Like Colleen Patrick-Goudreau says, it's change itself that's scary. Here's to making a positive, compassionate shift in 2012. Thank you for listening, and remember to be kind to the animals.